The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and underwriting our podcast for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to the June 2020 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month has been sun and surf. Speaking of the surf, the first article is entitled "The Lure of Rod and Reel." Although Holden Beach has grown over the past 50 years, not much is different in this Brunswick County community. Really, even less has changed at the Rod and Reel Shop, which has become an unofficial welcome center for vacationers, complete with worms. Written by Ed Harden. There's a picture here. It's a one-story building. It's got a white overhang metal roof against a blue clapboard. I think it's clapboard. It could be steel, but it kind of looks like wide pieces of wood on the front of it, painted sort of a royal, something between royal blue and sky blue. And there must be the owner in the front door in a matching T-shirt, color-wise, to the front of the building. There's a window and a wide door and another window. And there's a big old ice machine out there. And looks like something might be propane. I'm not really sure. And there's some stuff on some carts. They're probably for sale. And another ice machine on the other side. Must want a lot of ice down there, all near Holden Beach. Cars used to line up here to cross over from the mainland to the little island, filled with vacationers and locals, bug hunters and boaters. They were all heading to Holden Beach for different reasons. They still do, now driving over the soaring bridge across the intercoastal waterway. Just as they approach the bridge and the start of their beach vacation or fishing vacation or reunion vacation, they pass a local icon. A place where people stop to find out what's biting and where to find it, to top off their coolers with ice or to just catch up on local gossip. "You never know what's going to come through those doors," says Rick Grabbett, a licensed boat captain who for the last 10 years has shared his fishing expertise with customers at the Rod and Reel Shop. It's a must stop for those headed to the surf, the inland shores, or the fish-rich waters off one of the last old-school beaches in North Carolina. Hunter McRae, owner of the Rod and Reel, runs his shop the way he always has, catering to old friends and complete strangers, many of whom walk into the shop with the darndest questions. "It could be anything," he says. "People come in here wanting to know what live bait to buy or what artificial lure is hot. Or they might walk in needing advice on how to fix a generator. Or maybe they just want to come in and complain about some legislation or regulation. Whether it's fishing or politics, you better have an answer." Rod and Reel Shop has been right there on the side of Holden Beach Road since 1971, and McRae has owned it since 1986. It's a charming little bait shop that is so much more than just a bait shop. It's part general store and part post office, a gathering spot on cold mornings, a place where fishing boat captains come for bait or tackle, and others come looking for the latest weather updates. Some just come to talk to McRae and his staff of shopkeepers who have encyclopedic knowledge of the island, its history, and its traditions. They can tell you which way the wind is going to blow that afternoon, the temperature of the water, the tides and moon phases, and where the dangerous shoals have shifted. The Rod and Reel Shop is a breezy little place with people coming and going, asking anyone and everyone for advice. Most people who walk in here have no idea who the owner is, McRae says. I like it that way. I hire people who are independent, people who are responsible, people who will be here a while. Folks come here for reassurance, especially in uncertain times. In a little place like Holden Beach, which only has 575 year-round residents, they come here for vital information about day-to-day life. They come because they know it will be the same place it was yesterday, and it will be that way tomorrow. They also come here just to tell and to listen to stories and tall tales. A lot of lies come out of that little shop, Alan Holden says. There's very little truth coming out. It's the place where fish go to grow. You walk in with a 6-inch fish, and by the time you walk out, that fish is 6 feet long. Holden, with a seventh generation of the founding family, is the mayor of Holden Beach. He says that the town is, in many ways, exactly as it was when it was incorporated in 1969. We're more famous for what we don't have, he says. You still drive onto the island the same way that past generations did. There's one way on and one way off of Holden Beach, the bridge. No, it's not the rickety original or even the iconic swing bridge that disappeared in 1986 when the massive man-made promontory opened, forever taking away some of the charm of the island. Holden Beach has long held that charm against time and tide, resisting commercialism and marketing itself as the family beach. Change is something that comes slowly to this idyllic barrier island. Folks here like things to stay the same, whether you're a resident of Holden or one of the thousands who flock here in the summer, returning to beach homes and rental properties and the unspoiled 9 miles of sand from Lockwood's Folly Inlet to the west to Shallotte Inlet in the east. Yes, the island faces south, a quirk of Brunswick County that makes the island's veritable beachheads for storms blowing in from the sea. Many say that Lockwood's Folly Inlet is filled with ships that ran aground, piloted by Civil War captains and others assuming the graveyard of the Atlantic was farther north, safely away from the quaint little cuts and sloughs that make for great fishing but treacherous boating. The boats here remain where they sank, including the famous Southern Lady, a shrimp boat that lists portside below the bridge, bobbing in the intracoastal waterway like a ghost ship. Or, as the locals call it, a nuisance. Used to be, shrimp were locally called bugs. And shrimpers, bug hunters, another example of a little place stuck in its own time. Not the past, just its own pastime. Inside the rod and reel shop, they don't refer to shrimp as bugs, though. For one, Bo wouldn't understand at all. That's Bo, short for Bowie. Or maybe it's a mispronunciation of buoy. There's a running conversation between McRae and his wife about the origin of the name of the German shepherd that's part of the shop. In fact, many think Bo runs the place, and his favorite thing? Shrimp. He loves shrimp, McRae says. When Bo hears the word, a customer suddenly feels his warm and fuzzy snout as he edges into the conversation. Unconcerned with the pearls of wisdom about water conditions or the history lessons about the bridges or speculation about the fate of the Southern Lady. The lure of the rod and reel has always been the comfort and consistency of the place. Folks come for the news of the day as they would in any small town gathering place. They come to see McRae and his staff, or maybe they come to see Bo. No matter what, they come for the bait and stay for the conversation. The Rod and Reel Shop, 3401 Holden Beach Road, southwest in Holden Beach, of course. They have a Facebook page, facebook.com/rodandreelshop. And now, family, fish. Got it in the wrong order. Family, faith, and fish. In the village of One Cheese, two families have helped shape the local seafood industry for the past century. Today, their descendants are learning to overcome the modern-day challenges of commercial fishing and carrying on a Roanoke Island tradition that runs as deep as the ocean. At 4 in the morning, the phone rings. Unlike many people who get calls at that hour, Micah Daniels, co-owner of Fresh Catch Seafood in Wanchese, isn't fazed. She gets these early morning calls all the time. It means that one of her boats has come in with a full catch. This morning it's shrimp, and the challenge begins to get them headed, iced, and on their way to buyers as quickly as possible. Challenge is an apt word when it comes to the commercial fishing industry in Wanchese these days. And Micah says with a laugh that perhaps her biggest challenge is being the lone woman in an industry that has historically been dominated by men. I'm the only girl-run fish house in Wanchese, and that's not always made for easy going. Still, easy certainly doesn't describe the lives of the fishermen and fish house workers who have supplied major markets with fresh seafood for the past 100-plus years. The history of this local industry is full of interesting twists and turns. This is a fish story, but unlike most such tales, it doesn't involve exaggeration or lofty fibs about the one that got away. This is a true story set in the small fishing village of Wanchese, located on the southern tip of Roanoke Island. And while there have been plenty of notable contributors over the past century, two local families, the Etheridges and the Daniels, have spent generations supplying a large portion of the East Coast's seafood needs. Today, that supply trail goes well beyond the coast. Willie Etheridge Sr. opened Wanchese Fish Company in 1936 when he was 38 years old. By then, he was married to Mamie Perry, and they had two children, Willie Jr., who was 15, and Maud, who was 13. Willie Jr. helped his father at the fish company before and after school, but any time he wasn't otherwise occupied, he was fishing. After he graduated from high school, he enlisted in the U.S. Coast Guard in 1939 to fight in World War II. When he returned home after the war, his father offered him the management of Wanchese Fish Company, but Jr. turned it down. He loved being on the water and making the catches, and he preferred that life to one that kept him at a desk. Willie Jr. married Betty McDonald, and they had four children of their own, Bonnie, Irene, Susan, and Willie the Third. They also raised Betty's sister's children, Frank and Mark Vrablik. Meanwhile, Maud married a local boy named Malcolm Daniels, a member of the other Wanchese fishing family that would build an empire. They had their first son in 1942, and 14 more children followed, 10 sons and 4 daughters. Almost all of them went on to have ties to commercial fishing. When Willie Jr. turned down his father's offer to run the company, Willie Sr. offered it to his son-in-law, Malcolm Daniels, in 1946. For the next couple of decades, Malcolm took on the responsibility of, among other things, setting the price that fishermen received for their catches. At the same time, Willie Jr. was becoming widely known and respected as one of the best and most prolific fishermen in the region. Mark Vrablik describes a dip in fishing in the 1960s. Most of the 60s were not that good for fishing, he says. This was before all the regulations we have to live with today that are supposed to protect different species, and eventually the catches came back strong. In fact, during that time, when we weren't catching the fish we normally did, the swordfish were everywhere. From about 64 to maybe 71, we were the biggest swordfish port in the country. According to Daniel's family lore, it was haggling over the price of swordfish that created discord between Willie Jr. and Malcolm. In the early 1970s, Willie Jr. began his own enterprise, Willie R. Etheridge Seafood Company, in the original building where Wanchese Fish Company had been. Now, the company started by Willie Etheridge Sr. was being run by Daniels and faced stiff competition from his own son. The catches in the 70s and 80s were more than abundant as both fish houses worked to capacity for decades. As the fish industry boomed, other fish houses began to pop up. Most of them are gone now. With a passion edged to frustration that is often heard from commercial fishermen, Mark, who today runs Etheridge Seafood with Willie III, explains why. Regulations, importing, and the fact that Oregon Inlet, the only way for large vessels to get to the ocean on the Outer Banks is all but impassable. Etheridge Seafood used to pack 3 to 4 million pounds of bluefish every year, Mark says. Now with regulations, there's an 800,000 pound limit. We used to catch maybe 2 million gray trout. Now the limit is 100,000. Our one company could probably pack everything that comes through Wenches now. And these days, a huge percentage of the seafood Americans eat is imported. The bounty that God puts into these waters goes to very few of us in this country. He goes on to explain another hardship. Oregon Inlet's depth is currently less than half of what it was in the 70s. That inlet is maybe 6 feet deep now. Most trawlers draw about twice that, especially if they're loaded. Captains are just not going to take the risk of running aground. So they're taking their catches south to Moorhead City or north into Virginia. We probably lost about 75% of our sales in the past 10 years. Dare County is working on a dedicated dredge, which will solve the problem once it's operational. It might sound like the commercial fishing industry is nearing the end. But then you talk to Micah, a fourth-generation Daniels, daughter of Malcolm and Maud's fifth-born child, Mikey, who also ran Wenches Seafood Company until it was sold in 2015, and who pioneered the model of having a fish market and a restaurant on site. With ties to both families, Micah brings generations of fishing knowledge to her own fish company. She and her husband, Matt Huth, started Fresh Catch Seafood in 2016, even though some discouraged them from entering the industry. We've definitely had to learn how to make changes and to make it under the current circumstances of commercial fishing, she says. When asked if there's a future for Wenches in the industry, Micah gives a definitive yes. But, she says, fish houses have to adapt. Commercial fishing is one of the most regulated industry in the country, and regulations can be hard to deal with, and there is increased competition with imports and global markets, which poses many challenges to a fisherman's way of life, she says. But the good thing is that people who buy U.S. products know exactly what they're getting. They can rest assured about the quality. We're the most responsibly sourced seafood in the world. Still, every year, Micah and others have to deal with increasing regulations, more electronic monitoring, and harvest restrictions. Adapting is easier for those of us who are younger, she says. She points to O'Neill's Sea Harvest as an example of a fish house that is successfully adapting. Their model was to accept whatever bucket fishermen brought in, meaning a mixed bucket of whatever fish they caught, rather than requiring a huge haul of one fish. Consistent growth followed, and they added a restaurant and fish market. Today, O'Neill's is the biggest fish company in Wenches and one of the biggest in North Carolina. Mike is still passionate about commercial fishing. Having grown up with fishing in my blood, seeing what my family and others go through to make it, I totally understand why some in the industry are so frustrated, she says. These guys grew businesses out of a love for the water and all the God-given fish in it. They know these waters better than anyone. They're too smart to deplete any species. There might be another ingredient that Micah brings to Fresh Catch that reflects the Wenches fishing experience through the years. Faith. Did you know that our Pentecostal church began in the fish house, she says? Folks would come and sit on the fish boxes to hear sermons and worship. Our commercial guys are, as a whole, pretty God-centered men. There's a prayer many mornings that broadcasts as the boats are headed out. I always remember my family saying over the years that there's a lot of faith in fishing, and I like the double meaning of that. Fresh Catch Seafood retail stores on Mill Landing Road in Wenches. They have a website, FreshCatchOBX. And Willie Etheridge Seafood Company is on Mill Landing Road also. They don't have a website. And O'Neill's Sea Harvest is on Harbor Road. They are O'NeillsSeaHarvest.com. Lots of places listed here in the magazine where you could get fresh seafood. And they are from Barco in the north to Supply in the south. These markets are stocked with locally caught seafood by fishermen who've been traversing our waters for decades. I think we will not be reading all of them, but it's nice to know that there are so many of them. You're listening to Our State Magazine on the North Carolina's Reading Service. Comments, questions, 919-832-5138. Last article, The Cream of Calabash. In a town known for its seafood, a family ice cream business serves up nostalgic standards and creative concoctions that change with the seasons, written by Tim Bass. They arrive in Calabash from all over, locals and tourists trolling for seafood dinners, deep-fried and heaped high. They find plenty of it, too. The Calabash style has earned a devoted following in this shaded village tucked against the marsh grass and tidal river waters of southeastern Brunswick County. After their sizzling salty shrimp, oysters, and flounders, diners ease over to Calabash Creamery for a chilled, sugary finish. Yes, the tiny town that calls itself the seafood capital of the world also has a sweet spot. Two barnyard-sized plaster cows, Scoop and Dip, graze in the parking lot to let the herds know they've come to the right place. It's common to see customers' cars bearing license plates from as far away as Maryland, Massachusetts, and Missouri. Eager guests can announce their arrival with a clang of a cowbell by the door. Inside, they'll encounter a glass-topped dipping cabinet with 24 flavors. Oh, my gosh, one visitor says. A typical reaction. How do you decide? It's not easy. We stuck to true, old-fashioned, traditional American ice cream, says Christy Hansen, who runs the shop with her husband, Greg. We still serve the nostalgic flavors that people grew up with. She means the familiar chocolate, vanilla, butter pecan, and strawberry. But Calabash Creamery also invites customers to try something different, such as black raspberry, banana pudding, or a pineapple-tangerine combination called Carolina Sunshine. We experiment every winter, Greg says. That's our fun time. Some flavors are born strictly by accident. A lot of our customers will put in suggestions, and we'll try to run with those. Winter time is when we get in the kitchen and say, all right, what are we going to come up with? Let's have some fun. Make some ice cream. That fun yields tongue-tantalizing results. Among them, southern bourbon pecan, horchata, and salted caramel. Even the goof-ups yield delicious results. One employee who had intended to mix a batch of butter pecan mistakenly used a base of peanut butter before adding the pecans. Instead of tossing it out, Christy suggested improvising. Well, she said, let's throw some chocolate chips and peanut butter in there. At the time, the song Dirt Road Anthem was playing on the radio, so they named the Rich Brown creation Dirt Road. Basically, you take peanut butter and chocolate peanut butter, and you put them together, says Christy. We make it every year. The store stays open year-round, churning out options that change with every flip of the calendar, such as cantaloupe in June, apple pie in September, and maple walnut in October. The Christmas season has inspired peppermint stick, eggnog, and red velvet cake. Some flavors pay tribute to the shop's coastal home, like sunset peach and a white chocolate with chocolate cake crunch concoction called Calabash Crunch. People look forward to it, Christy says, of the personal or the seasonal switching. They know they can get certain flavors only that particular month, so it keeps people coming in. When Greg thought about opening an ice cream shop with Christy, his first move was to give her a way out in case the business partnership hit a rocky road, pun intended. That was 18 years ago, when the Hansons were in their early 30s. Greg was making a career change after the sale of his family's Calabash golf course, and Christy was teaching elementary school. They had a 5-year-old and another kid on the way. They had never run a business as husband and wife, and they didn't know much about making ice cream. I asked nicely if Christy would take a year's sabbatical, Greg says, just to make sure that we could work together. The Hansons went away to ice cream college at Carpigiani Gelato University in Winston-Salem. In a week-long course, they learned how to make gelato, American ice cream, sorbet, and Italian ice, and returned to Brunswick County and gave their tentative arrangement to a try, opening Calabash Creamery in July 2003. In all I knew all of my experience being in the classroom, the organization, and dealing with the kids, the staff, and all that kind of stuff, is what I was trained in doing, says Christy, who also had experience as a server and working events at a country club. Greg had the business background, but I had the customer service background. Now the Hanson staff includes their three children, Alexis, Miles, and Emily, along with a team of chipper young servers who spend much of their time confirming for customers that what looks good in the dipping cabinet does indeed taste good. Besides ice cream, the shop served banana splits, floats, sundaes, smoothies, and sorbets. Special occasion customers go for ice cream cakes and pies. After all these years, the Hanson's initial hesitances are distant memories. Along the way, Christy and Greg have learned that, yes, they can be spouses and business partners. You have to have a desire to make this thing work, to really make a go of it, Greg says. We do make a good team. With its covered porch, white picket railings, and rocking chairs, the 2,200-square-foot Calabash Creamery resembles a country house more than a business. An interior window gives customers a peek at the process. They can watch us making ice cream, Greg says. As soon as they walk through the front door, they look straight into the creamery. The whole place carries an air of dairy. A pasture mural rolls across one wall. Playful-looking cows peer out from framed paintings. A bovine butler displays the specials. Serving sizes are called calf, one scoop, cow, two, and, you guessed it, bull, for three scoops. Anyone who's determined to scream for ice cream can take the shop's kitchen sink challenge. A scoop of all 24 flavors, plus 20 toppings, plus whipped cream and cherries. One person, one spoon, 1 hour. Winner gets the whole thing for free. Failure means dishing out a cool $54.99. Nearly 20 people have succeeded, including a few YouTube competitive eaters who finished in a brain-freezing fast 12 minutes. Most customers, though, don't want to rush through the pleasure. They take their ice cream out to the porch and rock under ceiling fans and watch the line of traffic oozing from Calabash to the nearby beaches. Sunset, Ocean Isle, and Myrtle. No one hurries. And why would they? After all, they've topped their seafood feast with a scoop, or three, of creamy sweetness. That's a taste and a moment worth savoring. Calabash Creamery, Beach Drive Southeast in Calabash, North Carolina. You know where that is? Way down, as far as you can go along the coast. CalabashCreamery.com. Little ad here, shop, dine, and experience with our summer savings pass. Visit Elizabeth City. Sign up for free by scanning this QR code. That's going to be kind of difficult over the air, isn't it? Or visiting fun.visitelizabethcity.com. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org, and on iTunes. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.